Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.
Hi, Anonkululeko. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Adventist World Radio. I do hope that we captured your background appropriately.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. We're going to be talking about factors to consider before signing a commercial contract. And, you know, contractual terms play a significant role in business as well as personal agreement. And, of course, we want to focus on commercial contracts and what factors need to be considered before signing such. And I've been many of us actually do get involved in this. And we don't really pay much attention. We just look for the dotted line, sign, and then because we're just looking for the product that we're looking for. So please clarify for us, Nungu, what are we referring to when we say commercial contracts? Because it may be what I was referring to, perhaps different.
Yeah, so I think, thanks for that. Before we start, maybe we must just first set out what an agreement is.
Right.
So essentially it is a contract between two or more parties, where they'll bind themselves, you know, to certain terms and conditions. And there's obviously various types of agreements that one can enter into. You know, there's your more personal individual agreements, there's employment contracts, there's the commercial agreements that you've referred to, and those, you know, can be many. You can have sale of goods agreements, you could have commercial lease agreements, service level agreements. You know, confidentiality agreements would also constitute commercial agreements in certain instances. Partnership, joint venture. So yeah, there's different terms and conditions to each.
Right.
And they give rise to various, you know, obligations and performance relationships for the parties.
Okay.
I think perhaps what we should also just know is in order for any contract to be valid, there's certain requirements. The first of which is that there needs to be consensus, of course, between the parties. And what that means is that there needs to be a meeting of the minds. You know, the parties need to have the same understanding on what it is that they are essentially agreeing to.
Okay.
There needs to be capacity. So the parties signing the agreement need to have capacity to enter into it. So a simple example would be, you know, legal capacity, where the individual signing needs to be 18 years or older. And of course, if it's a minor, then the contract needs to be done in the presence of a legal guardian. In cases of your commercial agreements, I think what must be important to note is that, you know, the representatives or the signatories of those agreements need to have the relevant capacity, the relevant authorization to enter into those agreements on behalf of, you know, the various, the two entities. There would also need to then be formalities, you know, that need to be complied with. And these could be stipulated by the parties themselves.
Okay.
Or they could be prescribed by law. So that the contract needs to be dated, that the contract needs to be signed, you know, by all the parties, those sorts of formalities. Of course, the agreement needs to be legal. It needs to be lawful. It can't contain any conditions that are illegal or unlawful. And the specific type of contract might also need to comply with specific legislation. So for your commercial agreements, it might need to comply, you know, with the Companies Act. With a sale of goods agreement, it may need to comply with, you know, the Consumer Protection Act. With your employment contracts, obviously complying with your the relevant labor legislation.
Tell me.
And then, of course, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Nuku. I'm the one who's interjecting, and I do apologize for that. I just need to check now. These contracts, they need to comply with all of these relevant legislations that you are referring to. But some of these, by the way, can be in a form of a verbal, you know, form. They could perhaps be concluded in a verbal manner. Would they still be standing?
Yeah. Look, a verbal contract is still a contract. So long as all of these requirements are complied with, where there's consensus, where there's formalities, where there's legalities, etc., yeah, verbal contract is certainly valid and binding.
Mm.
There are certain instances, for example, with the sale of a movable property, where the contract actually does need to be in writing for it to be valid. But yeah, certainly, verbal contracts are valid and binding. I mean, even contracts that are entered into on WhatsApp or via email, you know, have been deemed by our courts to be valid and binding, so long as they comply with, you know, those requirements.
Is there a minimum, you know, value of this particular contract or deal for it to be deeming to be actually a contract? So, for instance, people may be entering into a deal pertaining a very small amount, and because of that, it may actually not even qualify in the context of what we're talking about today, or it does not matter the value.
No, the value doesn't matter. I mean, so long as the parties agree to what, you know, the payment terms are, you know, what the consideration is, whatever the consideration is, whatever the value is, then the contracts are still valid and binding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, you know, some people get into these contracts not having understood some of the terms used, you know, in the contract, and or perhaps may have even misunderstood a certain, you know, requirements or responsibilities that are under the contract, and now they've already signed the contract. Would they have a reason to or room enough to be able to terminate the contract?
Look, it's always advisable for you to obtain, you know, the necessary advice, whether it's legal advice, whether it's, you know, any industry specific expert, finance experts, whatever the case might be, in order for you to fully understand what it is that you are signing, because essentially once you've signed, you are bound. However, if it is that, you know, the individual has read the contract, perhaps not understood a portion, excuse me, perhaps there's a mistake, a common mistake, well, material mistake, in their mind, then that is or may be a grounds for the contract to be deemed void. You would, however, obviously need to obtain the necessary legal advice in relation to pursuing that, because you need to prove, you know, that there was some sort of material mistake or lack of understanding when you, you know, entered into the contract. Because as I mentioned, there does need to be consensus and a meeting of the minds, you know, before you enter into the contract.
So what you are saying effectively is that it may be difficult to actually renege from that.
Yeah,
if it's already signed.
It would be difficult. It would be difficult, correct.
But notwithstanding the fact that someone may perhaps have a reasonable explanation to put forward that truly speaking, I never thought that it was like that. You know, it actually reminds me of a statement that says ignorance of the law is no excuse. Would therefore ignorance of the terms of the contract be no excuse? And ngenile ngenile?
Correct, especially if there's a clause, and usually in these commercial agreements, there's always a clause that says, you know, the parties have sought, you know, the relevant advice, they've sought the relevant expertise before, you know, signing into this agreement in order to gain a better understanding of what it is that they're signing. So in those cases, if you've got such a clause, it would be very difficult for you to get out of it. I mean, I think even offer to purchase, you know, property, once you've signed, you've signed. You know, yeah.
Now, in these kinds of, you know, arrangements and all of that, what would constitute a breach of contract, as it were?
Look, there could be various instances that may constitute a breach. I mean, it's a commercial agreement and the terms and conditions are for one of the parties to pay by a certain amount or to perform a certain, you know, obligation, and they don't do that, then that would definitely constitute a breach. Of course, depending on what the actual terms and conditions of that agreement state. But where there's, as I've mentioned, you know, an agreement sets out what your obligations are, what you need to do to perform in terms of the contract. And if you fail to do that, you've breached, you're in breach. And typically speaking, you know, the agreement would set out what, you know, the breach provisions are, what would happen, what, you know, the rights of the other party would be if another party has breached.
Oh, now tell me, in terms of the parties getting into this, because we're now checking in terms of, rather what we're trying to check here is what are the things that the parties should consider before getting into this contract. Now, this is there no cooling off period to say that, all right, we're going to get into this and we agree. If in a week's time, 7 days time, no one is raising any issues, the contract will therefore be in force. Is there not something like that just to protect the parties?
Yeah, look, there are. There are certain cooling off provisions in line, of course, with the Consumer Protection Act. There are those provisions. And even if those provisions aren't necessarily detailed in the agreement, the parties can always rely on, you know, what the legislation says, what the Consumer Protection Act says as well.
Okay, that's quite interesting, because I thought it could be a little bit strict if it is you to sign on the dot and then that's it. So which means that there are some certain cool-off periods that a person can invoke in certain instances.
Correct, in certain instances, particularly, you know, in a sale of goods and services agreement, correct. Mm.
Oh, wow. Lastly, before I let you go, Nongolego, what are some of the tips that you'd give to the listeners who are looking into getting commercial contracts, perhaps something that we may have not touched at?
Yeah, I think I might have already touched it, but definitely always seek advice. Read everything carefully. Seek advice before you sign that contract. Understand what the contract, you know, is saying. What are the objectives? What is the scope? What are the obligations? What are the terms and conditions? What are the breach provisions? You know, what will happen if I breach? What can the other party do if I breach? What defenses could I raise, you know, if there is a breach? What are the dispute resolution mechanisms? You know, if there is a breach or if there's a dispute between the parties, where can I go? Do I go to high court, or, you know, can I refer the matter to private arbitration? But you definitely need to understand what your obligations are. Read and understand. Ask questions. I mean, if you don't understand what it is that's contained, seek clarity before you sign. Seek legal advice. Seek industry-specific expert advice before you sign. And yeah, I would say keep records of also your negotiations before signing. That's what I would say.
You know what? Two things that are actually popping up. One, you know, in terms of online, you know, engagements, because some of these contracts, I believe, a commercial contract could be online. For instance, one is purchasing something online. And I don't know what protection is there for the people who are getting into that contract, because now the other one is a seller of goods, the other one purchases the goods. And it does seem that there is not much of a protection. What can one do? Actually, should they depend on the Consumer Protection Act?
Correct. Depend on the Consumer Protection Act. Contact the relevant ombudsman as well. Seek advice. You can definitely seek advice where you've entered into something online, and there's some sort of issue there. CPA is your friend. The ombudsman also is your friend.
Right. Lastly, and as a matter of just interest, I see normally when people getting into these contracts, the terms and conditions are normally in fine print and quite lengthy. You literally have to squeeze in your eyes to be able to actually read this. Any particular reason for this?
Look, no particular reason.
Or they just want to trick the consumer, basically.
They just want to trick you. No, I'm joking. It's there. Read it. I mean, the terms and conditions are usually very lengthy.
And it's fine print.
And in fine print, yeah. I don't know if it's to trick the consumer, but it's there, and the terms and conditions, you know, you should read them before you.
Because it's actually quite daunting, because when I look at these things, you know, a page is given, it's a whole page of maybe 25 items. My goodness, and it's written in fine print, and I'm like, ah, no, just sign this thing, man.
It sounds like
very much like, no, we're just going to put this thing, it is going to be overwhelming, and they're not going to read it, and
they're not even going to want to
and they're going to sign it, and it now becomes our backup in case they raise anything. They say, no, you sign here, you read that, you understood, and all of that. So I think I get exactly where you're coming from, that it is important to get through it, no matter how lengthy it may look like. Fantastic. Well, Nonkululeko, I must thank you so much for your time and joining us this afternoon. Blessings to you.
Thanks so much. Blessings to you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio. From broadcast to baptism. Powered by SID Media.